People do hear strange things from time to time, but not nearly so strange as if you go to shortwave. Now, on shortwave, we have pirate stations, don't we, Terry?
Pirate stations are people who want to broadcast on shortwave but decide that they really don't need a license.
Yeah.
They typically use old and modified ham radio gear.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be younger enthusiasts. They gather on a certain set of frequencies, and they're very active on weekend nights and on holidays. For example, Halloween is traditionally the biggest night of the year for pirate radio broadcasts.
Is it really?
Yes, indeed.
They should be listening to Ghost to Ghost right here instead of doing that. But instead, they're transmitting illicit signals about where, so people can listen if they want to.
The most common frequency is 6955 kilohertz.
6955, and then I would assume up and down a little bit from that. They probably
right, about 10 kilohertz higher low with 6925, the second most popular frequency. But most of them are in sideband, either upper or lower sideband.
And what sort of broadcasting are they doing?
Well, one station currently active is called Shadow Radio. And its programming consists entirely of old radio dramas, principally the Shadow program from the 30s and 40s.
No kidding.
Another one is Voice of the Tiki, which features nothing but Polynesian music, the kind that you hear in Polynesian restaurants and fake luau's. One is Lounge Lizard Radio, maybe the only station left in North America programming Louis Prima.
All of these wannabe broadcasters, well, I guess I shouldn't say wannabe, they're doing it, are potential targets for the Federal Communications Commission, who really doesn't like that kind of thing, right?
Yes, indeed. They are running a major risk. I mean, I think the current thing is 10 years imprisonment, possibly $10,000 fine. Although in most cases, the FCC simply confiscates their gear and levels a fine of, say, $2,000 or $3,000.
Uh-huh.
The thing with the FCC is that a lot of these pirates operate sporadically, so that by the time the FCC has found a location for them,
they're gone.
They're gone.
And this goes on virtually every night? I mean, something can be heard almost every night, or what?
Primarily on weekends. Say, from Friday and Saturday night, especially after midnight in the east.
Weekend warriors, huh?
Yes. But there are also some pirates on the AM band in larger metropolitan areas.
Oh, really?
Usually at the new expanded end of the broadcast band, from 1610 up to 1700.
A lot of people don't even know the AM band expanded. You know, the newer radios have it, of course, but the AM band used to end at 1600. Now it goes all the way up to, what, 1700
even.
1700. So there's a whole new part of the AM band, and you're telling me there are pirates that are jumping in that part of the band?
Particularly in Boston and South Florida.
Really?
Many of these pirates are almost community stations serving new immigrants.
How do you recognize it? How would a listener out there recognize the fact that it's a pirate, not just another station?
For one thing, the technical quality usually will not be as good. You will often not hear any commercials. You will never hear call letters used or anything that a conventional broadcaster will use.
Hmm.
For example, we have one pirate right now on 1650 here in Las Vegas.
You do?
Yes, indeed, which does not use call letters, does primarily dance music, disco music, but it operates 24-7, and here on the northwestern side of Las Vegas has a very good signal that can be heard of quite well.
Nationwide, how many of these illicit stations do you think are on the air, Harry?
At any given time on the AM band, for example, I would say there must be dozens. It's hard to keep track because they come and go, and there's no central registry or database for these stations. On shortwave, typically maybe a dozen to 18 pirates will be active on a given weekend.
Have you ever... I know you can see Russell, I'm operator here. Earlier in your radio career, Harry, we all have some less than white blotches early in our lives. Did you ever venture into the world of No, don't you ask this, sir.
What?
I'm not going to ask that at all.
I'll keep the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah, okay, that's good. All right, so people can listen to this sort of thing. How much of a setup, you know, this is a frequent question I get, to listen to the kind of stuff that we've been talking about, whether it's the CIA or the Cubans or the weird signals that are broadcast, how much equipment does somebody have to have?
Actually, a very simple portable shortwave receiver, kind that's available from many outlets for maybe $200 or less, will do fine.
Really?
The advances in electronics, they have meant that today for $200, you can get performance equivalent to something that would cost you several hundreds or even thousands of dollars only a few years ago.
How much of an antenna attached to it to be effective?
That's the key, I think. Just a simple length of insulated wire, maybe clipped to the antenna, the telescoping antenna that comes with it, and outside of a window or such, will be enough to provide more than adequate signals for many of these stations, particularly those in North America.
And boom, the world opens up. Now, in Central America, Harry, there are a lot of, another variety of sort of pirate stations. I mean, these are anti-government stations and stuff like that that get set up in the jungle by groups down there, right?
Yes, indeed. They're called clandestine stations.
Right.
They differ from pirates in that a clandestine station is trying to bring about some sort of political change or incite revolution. One that's being heard right now that's attracting a lot of attention is one called Radio Free Cascadia.
Cascadia?
Yes, and it is an anti-Mexican government station that is either transmitting from within Mexico or near Mexico in the United States.
Well,
that one is in both English and Spanish on 15045 and is heard in the early evening.
15045?
Yes, sir.
My guess would be that if somebody from the Mexican government were to come upon these broadcasters, it would be worse than a $3,000 fine.
They would probably disappear.
As in?
Disappear.
As in a candidate for George to grab the soul.
You have that, yes.
Liquidation. So a lot of these broadcasters and a lot of these broadcasts that you hear are being done at the risk of the life of those doing it, clearly, right?
Yes, indeed. Particularly in Central and South America, there have been cases, for example, where some listeners to shortwave stations have actually heard them being taken off the air with automatic gunfire in the background.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed.
That would be a dramatic little piece of... by the way, what's the law on taping? I was going to say a dramatic little piece of tape. Can you tape for your own edification things that you hear, like your secret things and stuff?
Yes, you can. And in fact, there is no restrictions whatsoever on listening, recording, transcribing, or otherwise making use of these transmissions.
Now, there was legislation passed that makes it illegal to listen to cell phone conversations, for example, so you can't listen to anything. You can't listen to cell phones legally, right?
That's correct, but that legislation did not cover these shortwave broadcasts, particularly those from stations that are unlicensed, illegal, or otherwise fail to properly identify themselves.
But if you listen during an emergency, I don't know, like 911, say, and you hear something, I don't know, earth-shaking that would be newsworthy, for example, and you turn around and turn over that tape of the broadcast to the commercial media, somebody like me, have you committed a crime?
Technically, yes, but there is an exemption in these various laws that say that if you are passing on information relating to a legitimate emergency, there is a good faith exemption there. And to be honest, I don't know of any successful prosecution that has been made for eavesdropping or intercepting communications under these various laws. There have been some civil suits, but I'm unaware of any criminal prosecution that has been successfully launched.
Other than the clandestine radio stations, whose motive for operation would be clear, why do you think that pirate broadcasters do what they do?
I think it's going back again to our youth and ham radio, just the sheer joy of getting on the radio,
yes,
having your voice heard hundreds or thousands of miles away. It's a very intoxicating thing for
a teenager,
especially with radio.
It's magic.
Yes.
And I guess maybe that, could that be why the Federal Communications Commission, when they, you know, stumble on a youngster who's just sort of off on the trip you just described, they don't really get them too hard?
Well, most youngsters, particularly the ones under, say, 18, it's a warning. Usually they stop it, and then if it persists, it's when they bring in the heavy guns.
Heavy guns?
Yes, the fines and seizing of the equipment and such.
I see. But there's somewhat understanding of the youngster who is intrigued with the magic of radio and that sort of thing.
Well, of course, because many of the FCC employees felt that same magic in their youth.
Good answer. All right, I've got a million fast laughs wanting the frequencies of Mount Weather again and about what times, the appropriate times to listen. They're really interested in that, obviously, so lay it out one more time.
Okay, during the daytime, and this is daytime on the East Coast, they operate on 10493 kilohertz.
Right.
At night, and again, this is night on the East Coast, 5211 kilohertz. Both times in both frequencies in upper sideband. They run drills at irregular times, but usually once a week. But if there is a significant natural disaster or a terrorist strike, those are the two frequencies come to life almost 24 hours a day.
Yes. Now, did you hear what you would describe as, even though you might not be able to understand a transmission, you can understand perhaps if it sounds frantic or it sounds dramatic in or different in some way than a normal text?
In the days following the September 11th attacks, there was quite a bit of traffic, and you could tell some stress in some of the voices. However, I was impressed by the remarkable professionalism and calm exhibited during that time.
Well, you know, almost every warning we've had of terrorist activity in the country has sort of been followed with an explanation that, look, we've been monitoring the terrorists and the chatter, the telephone or secret chatter is really at a high level. You think they monitor, just like we're talking about monitoring, they monitor the terrorists in the same exact way?
I think they probably monitor the networks the same way, the number of stations in the same way. So even if they cannot understand the content of the transmission, the quantity of the transmissions, the length of the transmissions, whether or not certain transmissions are repeated,
all
those could yield valuable clues.
You betcha. Harry, what a pleasure it has been. We're going to have you on and do an entire program on this topic. I just wanted to get their lips wet out there. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. That's great.
Good night, buddy.
Take care.
Care.